WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When it comes to working with movie sound, sound designer Randy Tom has done just about every job in his field. He's recorded sound on the set, he's fabricated sounds in the Foley room, he's mixed sounds in the studio, and he's supervised the creation of sound effects. Tom won an Oscar for his work on The Right Stuff and two nominations for the films Return of the Jedi and Never Cry Wolf. He's also worked on Apocalypse Now, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Colors, and Tucker. Since 1983, Tom has been a staff sound designer at Lucasfilm. Randy Tom got his start in community radio at WYSO in Yellow Springs, Ohio. He still works in radio, co-producing radio dramas. His latest project is an adaptation of the Eugene O'Neill play The Hairy Ape. Those of us who work in radio also know Tom as the author of Audiocraft, a textbook on audio production. One of the challenges when recording dialogue in film is keeping your microphone and yourself off camera. I asked him to share some tricks of the trade for recording film dialogue.
There are lots of tricks, and I'm afraid you usually need to employ them all. The sound people on a feature film set are pretty low on the totem pole. Among other reasons, because it's always in the back of the director's mind that the sound can be fixed later. So that's often the first thing to be compromised. If you find after 30 minutes or an hour or 2 or 3 hours has been spent lighting a set to get the lighting exactly right, that you as the sound person need 30 more seconds to adjust a microphone, often that 30 seconds doesn't exist. The place where the boom operator, the person who's holding the microphone on the film set wants to stand is inevitably exactly the place where the gaffer and the director of photography want to place a light, and there's conflict between what would be the apparently good thing to do for sound in a scene and what's been done visually in the scene. Never Cry Wolf is a good example of a film that I did what's called production sound, which means the recording of the actors on location while the cameras are rolling, in which we knew that we had to get good sound. Some of the principal actors in that film were Inuit men who knew very little about the technology of the film set and would have been completely lost, I think, in an ADR looping session. That is, they would have found it very hard, I think, to come into a studio 6 months or a year after having been on the set and speak their lines in sync to replace dialogue that hadn't been recorded well on the set. So that we knew we had to get very good recordings of them, and that's one trick, is to identify the sounds, the lines of dialogue that you know you have to have, and concentrate on those, sometimes sacrificing others that would be easier to fix later on.
You worked on the film Apocalypse Now. Did you do any of the helicopter sounds and the war sounds, the jungle sounds?
I recorded a few of the helicopters, and I recorded a lot of the munitions, the machine guns and explosions, etc. And we arranged with munitions experts and film special effects people to get a hold of 50 caliber machine guns and all sorts of munitions, and we went to remote locations.
So when you're taking, machine guns, did you say?
Yeah.
To remote locations so you can record the sound of it, where exactly do you put the microphone so that... Now, what kind of mic do you use and where do you put it so that the sound sounds accurate?
Ideally, you put lots of microphones out and you use lots of tape recorders so that you'll have a choice later on. Often it's hard to get access to things like machine guns, or it's certainly hard to record explosions over again if they're very big explosions. So you cover it in a variety of ways. With a 50 caliber machine gun, you want microphones that are close to the machine gun so that you not only get the muzzle blast, but you also get the clang-clang of the ammunition belt going through it and the falling of the empty shell casings onto the ground or onto wood or metal. You want other microphones which are going to specialize in recording the muzzle blast and the other mechanical elements of the gun. It's good to have microphones 50 yards away pointing at it so that what you get is mostly the direct sound of the machine gun itself, but you get some echo and reverberation of the acoustic environment that it's in. Still other microphones probably should be pointed at lines of trees in the distance or hillsides so that what those microphones principally pick up is the echo. And that allows you later on to sculpt the sound in exactly the way you want.
You brought some sound with you that you used for the film Colors, which starred Sean Penn and Robert Duvall. This is a film about gang wars in Los Angeles. Let me play a little bit of the sound. Tell us how you use this in the movie.
There are two principal gangs in the film, the Crips and the Bloods. And there's a point at which the house that the Bloods live in is raided by another gang. And there is a fairly long period of time outside that house. That is when the camera is outside that house and you're hearing the sounds of the music that the guys are playing inside the house and their voices talking to each other and yelling. When you become aware that this other gang is sneaking up on them and their cars arrive and the guys get quietly out of the cars and you see that they have guns and they're walking toward the house. It's the sort of situation where a filmmaker would normally choose to use music, but Dennis Hopper wanted to see if we could do it with sound effects, and I listened to lots of sound effects thinking about what we might be able to use there. And the one that struck me as most eerie and frightening and seemed to be foretelling danger the most was something that I had recorded several years before. I'd actually gone out to record trains one day, and I was walking along some remote highway near a railroad track, and I saw one of those mechanical carpet sweepers, which is not used anymore now, I suppose, by many people. And somehow a Coke bottle had fallen into the place where one of the rollers was. I'm not sure whether someone must have put it there on purpose. And I didn't have anything else to do, and so I picked up this thing and started rolling it along the highway, along the asphalt, and it made an interesting sound, and I recorded it. And I found that I wind up using almost all the recordings I make sooner or later in one way or another. And somehow some little light bulb turned on in the back of my brain, and then I thought of that recording, and I went to the studio and found it and started manipulating it, doing the usual things, playing it backwards and changing the speed and adding echo to it, etc. And I found that by playing that recording at a lower speed and adding echo and reverberation to it, it made a rather eerie, foreboding sound. And I put that in the scene, and Dennis Hopper loved it, and that's where it wound up.
Do you have a whole library of sounds that you've just stumbled across and recorded to save for later?
Yeah, I do.
What are some of the things in there?
Oh, what's not in there? I find that when I go and record something, when I anticipate going to some place to make a recording, like let's say I want to go to a nuclear plant to do a recording because I think that there may be neat high-tech sounds there, more often than not, when I get there, the sound that I thought I was going to get is not there at all. But then I stumble usually onto some other sound that I never could have anticipated being there that winds up being more valuable to me eventually than what I thought I was going to get. A good example is one time I went to a nuclear plant to record high-tech sounds, I thought, and didn't find any interesting high-tech sounds at all. But the water cooler in the hallway outside of the manager's office was making an incredibly wonderful sound because it was broken. Usually things that are broken make better sounds than things that are working well. And I stuck a microphone inside this water cooler and have wound up using that sound in a high-tech and non-high-tech situation several times since.
What's the most striking use of silence that you've ever made in a movie?
That's a good question. I don't know if I can think of one off the bat. I like the question because it's an issue that I find occurs a lot in mixing films. Directors, especially young directors, who are a little insecure about the films that they've just finished shooting, tend to want everything in the film to be as loud as possible. And I think the tendency is to think that if the sound is really loud, it'll distract people from the fact that the shot maybe isn't as quite as good as they would have liked it to have been, or the acting isn't quite as good as they would have liked for it to have been. And I think often that's a mistaken tendency, and I find myself advising directors that it's not a good idea to have everything as loud as possible all the time, even in an action scene, believe it or not. Because if everything is loud, nothing winds up being loud. You really have to have dynamics. You have to have quiet places so that you appreciate the loud places in a scene or in a film.